The scriptures speak of ignorance, they speak of knowledge, and they speak of wisdom. Clearly, there is a huge gap between ignorance, knowledge, and wisdom. And so we want to explore that a little bit this morning. We also want to talk about a wisdom that comes down from above and a wisdom that comes up from the world that has modified God's way of life and God's eternal image. So our first grasp of wisdom occurred when we were children. We were ignorant when we went into the first grade, where most of us learned the letters of the alphabet. Then we learned how to read. Then we learned how to write. And today, we give absolutely no thought at all to those letters. We read words. We don't think about the letters. We have gained the wisdom to be able to read. Some of us like to read. We might read 4, 5, or 6 books a year. Without any struggle, without any problems, we might be able to do that because we have wisdom. The same thing with mathematics. First, we learned the numbers. Then we learned how to add and subtract and multiply and divide. And today we have wisdom. We look at things in the grocery store. We multiply things in our head. We add them up in our head. We don't really even have to think about these things because, again, we have wisdom. Learning how to ride a bike. First, we were completely ignorant. Or maybe we said, I can do that. We got on the bike, we fell. We got on the bike, we fell again. Until we learned balance. Now most people can get on a bicycle and ride all day without ever even having to think about it because of wisdom. And we could talk about a lot of things, typing on a keyboard, learning how to drive, but the same principle occurs. We are ignorant, we learn. We learn, we apply. We apply, we gain experience. And at a certain point, that experience turns to wisdom. And this happens in every realm of life. When we first start working on the job, we have a lot of things we don't know anything about. We're ignorant. We learn all the information. Then we're still a little uncomfortable. But over the years, we learn how to do all of the aspects of the job, and we have experience. And then at a certain point, people start coming to us. And I don't know about you, but that was always a pleasant thing. You go to everyone else. You have a need. You have a question. You have a need. And then suddenly one day, somebody comes to you, and you're thinking, how can this be? But that's the benefit of wisdom. The more experience, the more wisdom, the more wisdom, the more problems we can solve, the more we can live our lives without making mistakes. And so and I won't even bother with most of this because I think we've already developed it. But let's look at that fourth point. God has revealed to us that some of the things we are wise at is actually folly. Because as we were growing up, some of us were very ignorant about sin. But then we learned. I like this. But I'm not comfortable. My conscience bothers me a little bit with it. But over time, we learned to get past that. We got really good at it. We got experience. Now we are wise in certain sinful things. And so there's often a wide chasm between the emptiness of worldly wisdom and the wealth of spiritual wisdom. But one of the problems as a Christian, and even at our age, we still might find that we are wise because we have done something our whole life a certain way, and we know how to do it that certain way, and we're really good at doing it that certain way. But it's the wrong way. And that's what sermons are for. That's what reading the Bible is for. That's what Bible classes are for. They give us a chance to evaluate what we think we're wise at and to see whether or not we're actually foolish. Because there is a curse of worldly wisdom. God speaks about this. The message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. We know a lot of people like that. They are so wise in money. They are so wise in the workplace. They are so wise in so many things. But in the one thing that could give them eternal life, they're foolish. And it is so incredibly difficult to deal with that. I have a neighbor who, he knows a lot about everything. But when I try to talk to him about the scriptures, which he knows nothing, he is not interested. Yet God said, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise. The last thing we want is to have some of that wisdom that God says, I will destroy. And again, we see this in a lot of the denominations today. There are multitudes of churches who are very wise, and they know how to proclaim their teachings from the scriptures. But they're not true. Because their worldly wisdom. What we read about in verse 26, not many wise according to the flesh. You know, there's a lot of things in the Church of Christ that you don't find in a lot of other churches because the other churches see them as folly. Church autonomy. The old traditional worship service. Using the scriptures exactly the way that they are written, without stories and without embellishment. But God said, not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called, because God has chosen the foolish things of the world. You know, one of the hardest things there is to do is to become wise in something that everyone else thinks is folly. One of the most difficult things that we can do is to learn how to be a truly godly Christian when 99% of the world would look at us and say, you are a fool. It takes faith to do that. God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. I don't want to be ashamed. In Matthew 7, not everyone who calls me Lord, Lord, but only those who do the will of my Father in heaven. No matter how worldly foolish it seems, Jesus says, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven unless you do it. The weak things of the world. The base things of the world. The things which are despised and the things which are not. Have we become wise in these things? Can we hold our head up and be happy and feel that we are doing what is right, even if everyone in the whole place where we work disagrees with us and looks down on us? Jesus spoke. Even if your whole family looks down on you, he that loveth father, mother, son or daughter, husband or wife more than me, they're not worthy of me. That's where persecution comes from, brethren. Persecution comes when I do something that God says is wise and the world sees as foolish. And I have to become wise in that. So, we have a grave need to assess our wisdom. And I don't know if there's anything harder than that. Anything harder than being good at something, being content with something, knowing that something's been right our whole life, and then having to go back and find out it was wrong and start over again. What if somebody came to you and said, you know, you don't really know how to walk. Let me show you how to walk. Or you don't know how to put a button on. Or you don't know how to tie your shoe. I'm going to show you a better way. Most of us would say, well, the old way is fine. But there's a lot of things. Listen to Paul here. Let no one deceive himself. If anyone among you seems to be wise in this age, let him become a fool. Then he may become wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. There will always be. You know, the scientists look down on the scientist who believes that Genesis 1 is a literal account of the creation. And yet, God has revealed it, and those who are wise, they accept that. Same thing with husband-wife relationship. Same thing with moral activities and spiritual activities and doctrinal activities. We have a responsibility. Let no one deceive himself. Anyone among you seems to be wise in this age. Well, that's the rub, isn't it? That's the problem. Am I wise in this age? Did anything I picked up growing up as a kid? I learned how to walk. I learned how to talk. I learned how to tie my shoes. I learned how to button my shirt. I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty wise in those things. But I also picked up some things along the way. So we have a paradox. What is wise is foolish to the world and to the Christian, but they're different things. Sometimes opposite things. What is foolish is wise to the world or to the Christian. So we navigate through life trying to set aside the folly of what we grew up with, and we all did. I mean, brethren, let's be honest with ourselves. There's still some folly in us. Now, if that sounds insulting to you, then I'll have a set of scriptures here in just a few moments for us all to look at. But what we consider wise and foolish proclaims our worldliness or our spirituality. Which is it? Well, of course, all of us would say, it's my spirituality. But so would all the people in all of the different churches in the world today. There are, I think last time I read, there's 4,000 different churches in America now. And all 4,000 of them think they're truly wise. The Jehovah's Witnesses think they're wise. The Mormons think they're wise. The Baptists, the Presbyterians, the Catholics, we could go on and on. The Seventh-day Adventists, they all think they're wise. Sometimes we can see through their wisdom to see the folly. But can we see through the wisdom to see our own folly? Well, I don't have any. I'm a member of the Lord's church. Brethren, let's be honest with ourselves. You know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I think that's a proverb for lazy people who don't want to go through the process again. You can teach an old person. Jesus speaks of someone who comes in at the 11th hour and receives the same reward. So there's nothing more difficult. Try it sometime. Try to use your other hands to button a shirt, or try to tie the shoe using the other lace and trying to get it, and you'll realize just how frustrating it is to try to do something differently than you've always done it. And if we don't realize that in the material realm, we probably can't see it in the spiritual realm. Your obedience has become known to all. Therefore, I am glad on your behalf, but I want you to be wise what is good and simple concerning evil. That's tough. Sometimes everyone else can see me clearly and I can't. And sometimes everyone else is afraid to come and point it out to me. And isn't that sad? Because if we see ourselves, there's hope. If we can't, Jesus put it this way, if your eye is single, your whole body is full of light. If your eye is darkened, your whole body is full of darkness. So let's just look at a couple of scriptures real quickly. I'm not going to spend any time on them, but I just want to look at them. The wise in heart will receive commands, but a prating fool will fall. To do evil is like sport to a fool. He wants to get better and better at it, just like a baseball player, just like a football player. It's a sport to him, but a man of understanding has wisdom. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. That's what you get every first day of the week. That's what you get when you're reading the Bible. That's what you get when you pray for wisdom. Counsel. A fool has no delight in understanding, but only in expressing his own heart. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than for him. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Now, it would be nice if that's global, but it's not just global, it's individual. I may be the perfect individual 90% of my life, but I got this little area over here. Most churches are like that. Most of the things you find in all of the different churches are just exactly right. It's just a small little poison, just a small little amount of poison, but that's the same thing in our own lives. And there's no easy way. Be not conformed to this world. How do I know if I'm conformed to this world? Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. How do I know if I've been transformed? That you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. You know, James talks about the Word of God like a mirror. And he says, if you're a hearer and a doer, then you're not like that man who sees his face in the mirror and goes away and forgets what kind of person he is. If anyone is in Christ, he's a new creation. Old things have passed away. All things have become new. And since you have put off the old man with his deeds and have put on the new man who is renewed in the image, in the knowledge according to the image of him who created him. So as we become a Christian, we find that we're right back as kids again. I don't know how to pray. It's uncomfortable to pray. I have to learn to pray until I can run. I have to learn to pray until I'm wise in it. Some people never get there because they just give up. It's hard to learn something new. Same thing with singing. You know, we can all sing songs to the radio, but singing with melody in your heart, that's tough. And most people, they try and they try. Have you ever just thought to yourself, I need to be laser focused on every word, and I need to feel the thoughts of those words and convey them as melody to my God? Have we gotten there? Are we wise in our singing? Or are we still hunting and pecking like somebody who's learning how to type? We do it, then we don't do it. Sometimes we sing a whole song, and oops, I forgot to make melody in my heart. Putting off the old man, putting on the new man, uncomfortable. Teaching an old dog new tricks. It's no fun. Most of us don't want to start new hobbies as we get older because we don't want to go the, quote, learning process, failing and failing until we finally get it right. But that's the only true path. So I think the most difficult first step in exchanging worldly wisdom, which God sees as folly, for the wisdom from above, which God sees as true wisdom, is identifying it. Most of us can't see ourselves clearly. Like I said, most of us here in this room, would I guess we could say you're like ivory soap. You're 99.9% pure. But that 0.1%, how do you feel about that? Well, I'm just about there. No. Paul said, I press on, forgetting what lies behind. I don't care if I'm 99.999% pure. There's still one ten-thousandth of a purity that I still need, and I'm going to keep working toward that. We can't see all our faults. But if we're open to listening and seeing ourselves more clearly, if we respond to criticism in a sermon or by an individual with disbelief or anger, maybe half the time you're right. Maybe you should be angry. Maybe that person is pointing out something that's not true. But what about the other half? We all claim it, but can we prove it? Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. Can we claim it? Are you doing things in the meekness of wisdom? I know we don't like Greek definitions, but sometimes they're very helpful because meekness in English is not meekness in Greek. Meekness in the Bible is not the meekness of today. When we talk about a meek husband, we're talking about a browbeat husband who just caves in and doesn't take a stand because he's weak. Meekness is equated to weakness because for the world, that's what it is. When I'm going to give in to your needs, when I'm going to give in and let you win, You're weak. Why would you do that? We live in a dog-eat-dog competitive where the winners are the victors. And the losers are the losers. Well, that's not the way it is in the scriptures. Turning the other cheek is losing. But if you can do it, you have power. Because most of us could. We could turn around and take that person if we wanted to. But we won't. Not because we're weak. Look at that yellow section there. In English, meekness suggests weakness. I think we'd all agree with that. Most people in the world, if they see you acting meek, they're going to get a scornful look on their face and see you as less. And do we have the strength and the wisdom to do that? When Jesus said, "I am meek and lowly," I mean, I was thinking about this during the Lord's Supper. He let those people mistreat him. I think that might have been the hardest thing. He could have stopped him. That guy hit him in the mouth. That person who put the bag over his head and hit him and said, "If you're the Son of God, tell me who you are." Those soldiers who spat on him and put the crown of thorns and smote him on the head with a rod and put on a purple garment. You think that was easy for the Lord? You think he was weak? Did he endure all of that because he just couldn't do anything different? Didn't he tell Peter, I could get legions of angels right now. We could stop this in a heartbeat. In English, meekness suggests weakness. But in Greek, it's the fruit of power. Or let me rephrase that. In the scriptures, whenever you see that word meek, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Well, how can I inherit the earth when I'm letting other people walk all over me, when I'm letting other people do what the Lord tells me I'm supposed to do? Because I'm strong. That's how. Our response to a rebuke and our attempts to help us, even if we don't agree, even if we are scornful, even if we think to ourselves, "Who are you to tell me anything?" We still should take it, because that's what meekness of wisdom is. So our response reveals our wisdom. Do not correct a scoffer, lest he hate you. Have you ever thought less of someone because they had the courage to come and tell you something? Then you're a scoffer. Rebuke a wise man and he will love you. Have you ever been rebuked and always thought of that person with love and respect and honor from that day forward because they helped you with something even though you didn't want to hear it at the time? Give instruction to a wise man and he will still be wiser. Teach a just man and he will increase in learning. That is a critical element of our wisdom. When people come and correct us, when a sermon clearly corrects us, what do? When Jesus tried to correct the Jews, they were filled with wrath because they were fools. They crucified their own Messiah. They will stand before their own Messiah on the judgment day before they are cast forever into the pits of darkness. Were they wise? He who disdains instruction despises his own soul. But he who heeds rebuke gets understanding. Where are we in this? Where would you put yourself? Are we wise? Are we a fool? Are we a scoffer? Rebuke is more effective for a wise man than 100 blows on a fool, because those 100 blows on the fool are never going to do any good. He's never going to change. What about us? You've heard sermons before that rebuked you. Strike a scoffer, the simple will become wary. Well, I'm not going to do that around that person again. I'm not going to change, but now that I see he's going to rebuke it, he'll never see this again. I'm wary. Didn't learn anything. God still sees through it. Rebuke one who has understanding, and he will discern knowledge. So, from these verses, where would we put ourselves? Am I a scoffer? Am I a fool? Or am I a wise man? Am I spiritually what I ought to be? So, meekness means gentleness, turning the other cheek. It's a fruit of power. It's allowing people to compel you to go the second mile. It's the person who can be cut off on the highway and, okay, I didn't deserve it, but that's the way life is. Jesus said, turn the other cheek. I'm not that meek yet, but I'm working at it because I understand that is what we're supposed to do. Now, I could rebuke you strongly if you get angry on the road when people you don't even know who are doing things that you don't even know why they're doing them, and you're getting angry with them when it may have just been a terrible mistake that they're so sorry about. There's no meekness there. In the eyes of the world, the meek are weak. They act meekly because they can't do anything about it. That poor kid in high school that was a beanpole that was just mistreated and took it meekly because he knew he'd be pounded into the dirt, that's not meekness. That's fear. Children often call a gentle and mild person a sissy or a chicken because of their worldly wisdom, and it hurts. I'm going to show you I'm not a chicken. We're going to go fight. But we shouldn't fight because Jesus said, turn the other cheek. So am I going to be a fool to Jesus or am I going to be a fool to them? Am I going to be a chicken to Jesus or am I going to be a chicken to them? Am I going to be a sissy to Jesus by not standing up and letting them walk all over me? Say, Alan, that doesn't make any sense. No, it doesn't. That's why it's a paradox. What seems wise in the world is folly to God. What seems folly to the world is wisdom to God. Worldly wisdom says this, only wimps and cowards act with gentleness and mildness when mistreated. I think that's the hardest thing about meekness is that's how we feel in our heart. We really feel that way. If I let that person walk on me, I'm not a man or I'm not a woman. I'll fix them. I'll make sure they know you're not going to get away with this. Whatever you do next will be folly. Won't be wisdom. People die on the freeway all the time because they're going to show somebody that they're not a chicken, that they're not a sissy. Sometimes it's better just to turn the other cheek. You know, really, this is just the pride of life masquerading as wisdom. And if we can't change it, we really are fools. We really are. Jesus said, if you call your brother Raca, if you get angry with a brother, if you say moron or morose or somebody who's an empty-headed idiot or jerk or stupid, Jesus said, you're guilty. You're guilty of the council. That's not wisdom. Meekness is a choice for the powerful. If you choose to take it, you'll be like Jesus. You will be powerful. The world won't see you that way, but God will. Where would you rather be? But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above. You know, some people are really good at cutting people to the core. Some people are really good at vindication or vindictiveness. Some people are really good at cutting you off at the knees. And they're so proud of themselves. Nobody can get the better of me. No matter what happens, I'll always come out on top. If you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. Those are not good sources of wisdom. Demon wisdom. Sensual, worldly wisdom. Where envy and self-seeking exist, self-seeking means I'm going to come out on top. I'm always going to come out on top. I don't care who comes after me. I'm going to win. Win? You're going to lose if you feel that way. So, are we good at that? Is that where our wisdom lies? Is our wisdom earthly? Sensual? Demonic? But then there's the wisdom from above. Wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Now I only have one more slide. We're just about finished with the lesson. Where do we sit right now? Are we feeling pretty wise, or are we feeling pretty rebuked? Are we feeling like I'm growing and developing and becoming an expert in doing these things, or do we still feel like children who get on a bicycle and keep falling? But you know, getting on the bicycle and falling is better than saying I'm never going to get on the bicycle, because the person who says I'm never going to get on the bicycle will never get any wisdom with that. But a lot of Christians, they just kind of put this out of their minds. It's frustrating. It's demeaning to fight against something that we always lose and fall. Well, I'm just going to keep hunting and pecking. I don't want to have to learn how to use all my fingers. Everybody wants to learn how to use all their fingers. But it's hard and it's frustrating. And, you know, it was easy to do in the 10th grade. That's when I learned how to type. It was easy to go from hunt and peck to 60, 80 words a minute. I mean, you can just fly along. It's fun. But if I was trying to learn how to type now, I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if I'd want to do it. Not worth it. It's easier just to do this. Christians are the same way. Some Christians, they want to straightway forget what kind of person they are. So, is your wisdom earthly, demonic, and sensual? You'll find out on the judgment day. You don't want to find out then. You want to deal with it now. So if this is an exact description of my character and my goals, that's what I find myself doing through the course of the day. Yes, I still get a little angry, but I'm fighting it. Yes, I still do things to get even, but I'm fighting it, and I'm repenting of it, and I'm telling people I'm sorry. That is spiritual growth. But if we don't want to think about it, if I still see these things as being folly and weakness, wouldn't you have to say I got the wrong wisdom? If the scriptures point me in one direction and my worldly upbringing points me in another direction, isn't that the aimless conduct handed down from our fathers? How can I be holy as he is holy if I'm holding to that? I can't be separated. I can't be different. So as we finish the lesson, I'm just going to bring back a slide from earlier in the lesson. Let no one deceive himself. If anyone among you seems to be wise in this age, let him become a fool. As I said, that's hard to do. It's hard to leave the hunt and pack and to go to the 10 fingers. It's really hard. But let no one deceive himself. If you're really wise at hunting and pecking, you need to become a fool so you can really be wise. Now, that's a simple illustration. But it covers every sin, every weakness, every misconception, every false teaching, every misunderstanding that we have. If we think we're wise, we need to become a fool, because the wisdom of this world and this age, which is earthly and demonic and sensual, is foolishness with God. I tried not to make this a rebuking lesson, but I think many of us feel a little bit rebuked right now. I hope we do. I hope we have a good and honest heart and that maybe something has come up. If it hasn't, let me tell you something, brethren. None of us are really 99.9% pure. We're probably more like 40 or 50%, because it's hard to be a Christian. And about the time you conquer one thing, you find a whole new mountain range. Oh my, there's another one to climb. And when you get to the top of that one, if you ever do, what do you find? I'm still only 50%. There's another one I've got to go over. That's what God wants to see. That's how Paul was. As we open the song of encouragement this morning, and we look at number 332, I surrender all. That's a really good lesson, because I hope at this point in the lesson, some of us, or maybe all of us, see some things we need to surrender. So as we sing this song, if there's anyone out there whose heart is touching them, act on it. Now, you may not need to come forward. You may not need to be baptized. But you may need to reevaluate, reconfigure, realign, and modify certain conducts. And you need to make the decision right now. I'm going to focus on this week. Because if you don't, by next week, new sermon, new responsibilities, old ones gone. As we sing the song, if we can be of any help to you in any way, we invite you to come while we together stand and sing.